This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about bullying and school violence prevention. My guests are Deputy District Attorney James Wade, who's the deputy in charge of the juvenile unit, San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. I have worked with James for many years now, although I'm not in the juvenile division. Jeffrey Hayden, who's a certified specialist in criminal law with offices in Redwood City. Garrett Rutgers, a certified specialist in criminal law in Redwood City. Natalie Rutgers, who is Garrett's daughter. She's a 16-year-old 10th grader at Aragon High School. Our last guest is Rick Phillips, who's the executive director of Community Matters, which is a nonprofit organization promoting violence prevention in schools. And let me tell you just a little bit about that organization. It's headquartered in Sebastopol. It's a national leader in bullying and violence prevention. The mission is to collaborate with schools and communities to engage, equip, and empower young people to become change agents and peacemakers. Mr. Phillips actually co-created, and he'll talk a little bit about this during the program, the Safe School Ambassadors Program, which is a youth involvement violence prevention program implemented in over 900 schools across North America. You may not know this, and I certainly didn't before getting ready for this program, but each day in the United States, more than 160,000 children stay home from school because they're afraid of being bullied. Nationally, 7,000 high school students drop out per day, and as many as 10% of these students report that it's because of bullying-related incidents. According to the U.S. Department of Education, each year as many as 900,000 secondary students are cyber-bullied by their peers, often with dire consequences. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, which certifies 11 different fields of law, including criminal law. Additional funding is provided by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. And I welcome all, actually, five of you to this program. I wonder if we could do this. I think most of us who, let's say, are not in the area of bullying or don't know it directly, certainly can recognize that it involves physical violence or may involve physical violence. What other kinds of bullying are we talking about that we want to talk about on this program? James, can you tell us in that you're the prosecutor?
Yes. Well, bullying takes various forms. The forms which we see, of course, are the physical, but we also see cyberbullying, which is basically bullying over text messages, the internet, any type of social network type of thing. We also see bullying from the standpoint of mental bullying, where individuals will harass individuals that are at school or even outside in the public
area. When you say mental bullying, you mean they'll just say nasty things to them? Is that what you mean or what?
Well, that's part of it. It's the verbalization of it, but it's also a situation where individuals will, for example, they'll be at school and they'll just go by the individual that they're bullying and stare at them. Mm-hmm. And have their friends do the same thing mm-hmm. to make them uncomfortable at being at the location where they're at. So this is the type of mental bullying that we also see, mm-hmm. and that could lead to physical bullying or cyberbullying.
Rick, you have been doing this for many years right now. You developed, you founded Community Matters. You've been going all over the country, apparently, working with schools, apparently as many as 900 schools across North America. What's your assessment of the kinds of bullying that you have seen?
Well, I think Jeff said it pretty accurately. The interesting thing, Chuck, is the only bullying that we're aware of that's decreasing is physical bullying. And that might be interpreted as a good sign, but in reality what's happened is young people have become more sophisticated in relational aggression, mean girl kind of behavior, sexual harassment behavior, discrimination against LGBTQ kids of a different sexual orientation or considering a different sexual lifestyle. So this is a much more pervasive virus that is infecting more and more children. It continues to mutate over these last 10 years.
What do you mean by mutate?
Well, the mutation is that when I was a boy, a bully was often a thug male. using his
who size, you'd like to beat up, yeah.
Yeah, who used his size or social power or both to intimidate or frighten or hurt. Today, a bully could be a 10-year-old girl who, as Jeff said, with the what James said, with the press of a button, can, you know, spread a vicious rumor, a compromising photograph, or a mean-spirited message with very little chance of there being accountability. So this mutation has just changed the form, the style. But clearly, know this, bullying has gotten younger. It has also gotten meaner. And increasingly, young people are desensitized and becoming more indifferent to it happening around them.
So how do they deal with this when you say they're desensitized? How are they dealing with this?
Well, if a fight were to break out at a local high school, what we would likely see is a camera come out or a cell phone come out of somebody's pocket or purse, and they would want to take pictures so that could be uploaded for a YouTube moment in the sun. And this is where the lines are being blurred between what's entertainment and what is real emotional or physical violence. That's the desensitization. It's becoming more of an observer's sport.
Actually, it's not only, this is James, it's not only just an observer's sport, it's a situation where individuals set the whole thing up in order to videotape it, to place it on YouTube or other social networking sites so other people can see it, and that also keeps this bullying situation going.
Natalie, you're a 10th grader in one of the high schools in San Mateo County. Tell us, what have you observed in your young life of bullying?
I have seen that, well, like, at school there isn't as much physical bullying that you notice, but then there is the whole internet side of it where kids can go on Formspring and just post anything as anonymous, and it takes away the fact that someone knows who said what. And
going on the internet, are they saying the name of the person who they want to bully? Is that name put in, on the internet?
Well, there's profiles where a person, you obviously know who it is. Their picture's up there, their name's up there, and anyone can go and say anything about them.
I see.
So it's just really negative. And people don't really confront each other in person anymore. It's all just online.
It's all online. Isn't that incredible? Just amazing. James, did you have something else you were going to say?
No, I'd agree 100% with what Natalie said. Because they can do this over the internet and be anonymous in their postings, they get more graphic and more detailed with regards to the threats and the bullying that goes on. But the other thing is they get other students to post comments about the situation. And that's where, like I said, you have this bullying situation becoming even more prevalent.
What kinds of are you prosecuting any cases like this when we're talking about bullying on the internet? Has it gotten to that point? Because this is a pretty sophisticated type of prosecution if you can do it.
Yes, we prosecute cases like that all the time, but you have to understand, it not only is done over the internet, thereafter it becomes a situation where it becomes a physical thing, and we prosecute them for the actual physical act and also the acts that occur over the internet itself.
So are you saying that very frequently there may be bullying on the internet, which then develops into actual physical bullying?
Definitely.
Physical violence?
Definitely.
Really?
And that's where you see all the postings on a Facebook or a YouTube, because it starts off as a internet type of situation, then it leads to the physical situation, and then you get all the postings. So you can charge individuals for the actual physical act, but you also can charge them for the emotional act.
James, in some of the cases that you are handling, and you've been the deputy in charge of the juvenile division of the San Mateo County DA's office now for, what, 2 or 3 years, something like that?
Yes.
Do you have a situation where it appears that there are more than one person who's doing the bullying together, and if so, are you prosecuting them together in the same case, or is it usually just one individual who you're prosecuting?
It could be either one individual or multiple individuals that are bullying one person. And we would prosecute them either as individuals or as a group. We've done that in many situations, so that's not uncommon.
What kind of law have they broken? What is it? This is under the penal code, I presume.
Yes, it's under the penal code, and a lot of it deals with the actual physical assaults and batteries, but it can also be dealing with sending annoying text messages or postings on the internet. You can charge individuals for sending those actual postings.
What code sections are those that you do that under?
It would be under 653M of the Penal Code,
really?
Which is annoying or harassing text or telegraphic or telephonic communications.
Well, Jeff and Garrett, both of you have come here because you're both certified specialists in criminal law and people who I have had cases with, as well as know very well. Jeff, you've been a great great supporter of this program, both on the air as well as Call a Lawyer Night. How have you dealt? I know you've handled some of these cases. How have you dealt with this?
I've handled several of these cases. One of the things that I think we need to be careful of is we all know, and we've already heard, that bullying takes many forms. It may be physical aggression. It may be texts that are sent out, things to intimidate somebody to where they're afraid to go to school, whatever it may be. And I think the temptation is to leap, to take in too much conduct, to say sometimes a fight is just a fight, and it's not a situation where somebody's being dominated and it's bullying. Sometimes a threat is just a threat. I think that the more difficult task sometimes to unravel, is this really somebody dominating somebody else to the point where they're afraid to go to school or won't leave their home? Or is this really a skirmish between two people? And it's hard from outside, particularly when you're dealing with an upset parent, when you're dealing with perhaps people that were watching and not participating. Where do you draw the line and separate out? This is a bullying situation. This is bringing in lots of people aiding and abetting or assisting the person doing it, maybe even instigating it, as opposed to the schoolyard fight, which I think most men have experienced at some time growing up, they're in a fight. And the reality is that when you're in school and you've been in a fight, people are watching.
So how do you deal? How do you deal with? I mean, James, let me ask you in response to what Jeff is talking about, people who are there watching and apparently they're thinking, wow, this is really great. I'm enjoying seeing this guy beat up this person, this bully beat up this person. How do you bring in people like that? Do you prosecute people like that who are doing that?
No, we don't prosecute individuals that are just standing around watching. But if they are promoting this situation in any fashion, for an example, if they are encouraging them to commit more of an assault than would have occurred had they not been there, then we may be able to charge them as an aider and abettor. Or if they knew that the situation was going to occur, the fight or the bullying was going to occur, and they somehow assisted this individual in getting the person that's being bullied to a particular location, then they become an aider and abettor, and then we can charge them with the same type of crimes for which we would charge the person who's actually committing the offense.
Garrett, have you handled any of these cases where somebody who is charged as an aider and abettor in a bullying situation?
Oh, sure, yeah.
How do you deal with something like that?
Well, the first response for any defense attorney is to try and, of course, separate out your particular client from the activity, or to show that he was, in fact, there just to watch, happened to be in the area. But, you know, oftentimes the prosecutors are fairly careful. They've got evidence beyond just the person being there and watching. There's usually a pre-existing relationship between the perpetrator who's invoking most of the violence and the person who's there to watch. There's usually plenty of text messages and messages on Facebook. Right. So, you know, we are in the internet age. Everybody in this room is pretty old, and we've been doing this for a long time.
Except for Natalie,
and that's why we brought her. But it used to be that we would see just the assaultive activity, and there would be a lot of speculation going on about how it was motivated. Sometimes you'd know, but usually you wouldn't. And as far as prosecutions were concerned, It didn't really matter so long as you had the physical violence and you could prove what happened, there would be a crime that was filed. What I'm seeing now, more often than not, with the 653Ms that Mr. Wade mentioned, that being the annoying, harassing, stalking kind of behavior, that's usually attached because by the time it's in court, there has been a fight.
Mm-hmm.
So usually those things are attached after the investigation gets started and you start to see the pattern, and those typically are attached behind the assaults. I have not seen a case where there's a young person, it could be an adult, but typically this is young people, where it's just really internet bullying, you know, saying really nasty things about a person.
You have not seen the case?
I've not seen it, and okay. I think it would be more difficult because there are First Amendment protections. You're free in this country to say what you mm-hmm. think, so long as you're not threatening someone. Or threatening to commit future acts of crime. If your opinion is that you don't like a particular group or nationality,
you're free to say so. Yeah.
And you're free actually to slander somebody, put them in a group that they may not belong to. There's a lot of freedoms that we have that can be abused. So I'm not seeing those prosecutions yet. I think I'm probably glad for that in some respects, but of course the contrary is that people do bully because of that, because of the anonymity that we've been speaking about.
Jeff Hayden, I know you wanted to say something.
I just wanted to add that while we're not seeing a lot of criminal or delinquency prosecutions based solely on internet threats or that type of promotion, I'm just getting started doing school expulsions, and I have seen them there. I know somebody personally who was expelled from a nearby high school for that very purpose. She had had an altercation with somebody, made a comment in her social network that was seen by the school. Mm-hmm. And for anybody listening, if you're out there doing stuff on social networks, you have to be mindful of who your audience is. Your audience includes the people that are authority over you, whether it's the police, whether it's the school, whether it's your parents, whether it's your friends, whether it's the people that are going to perhaps do something based on what you've posted, even if it's not your intention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Rick, coming back to you, you're going out to schools and have been for many years trying to set up programs for prevention of violence. What are you seeing? Are you making any real progress in this area?
Well, let's go back to roots. You know, Columbine, April 19th, April 20th, 1999. So 13 years ago, we had this seminal event. From that event, the United States government and the Congress passed the Title IV Safe and Drug-Free Schools Act. That became a funding mechanism where for about a decade, public schools had resources to spend on bullying and violence prevention programs. And then that stopped about 3 years ago. What we noted over about a decade was the predominant response by public schools was to increase camera security presence, school resource officers, develop what we call zero tolerance policies, heavily punitive policies to suspend and expel as the primary strategy, kind of a control the environment we call outside-in approach. It is not effective because this is a people problem. And the best solution to a people problem is to wake up the courage of the people, meaning young people, to begin to speak up when they see their friends or classmates or peers say or do things that can be hurtful. Because it is the social norms, Chuck, on a given campus that makes it cool to be cruel or cool to be kind.
Mm-hmm.
That can be impacted by the bystanders who, by their silence, give permission, mm-hmm. or by their activity, begin to change the social norms that allow the virus to grow.
So, I know, Rick, that you are very anxious in trying to develop strategic partnerships with corporations in that our economic situation is so bad in this state, well, in the country generally. But what is your organization trying to do, Community Matters trying to do, in terms of bringing in corporations to take a role in this and also contribute money that may well help to improve the situation?
It's a good segue from what I mentioned, that the schools lack funding. The federal government has withdrawn Title IV monies. The budget cuts have certainly strapped schools, fewer personnel, fewer campus supervisors. So there is not the external controls. So we recognize that if we can form public-private partnerships, if we can reach out to corporations who have a social justice or social responsibility principle within their business, that they can partner with us, partner with the public schools, so that we can educate more young people to begin to raise their voices when they see the injustice or intolerance happen. We can educate children, each one, reach one, to begin to inspire change, not overnight, but over time. So we're trying to be a catalyst for organizing public-private partnerships so that we can help the schools, not by buying more equipment or moving kids from one school to another, but by waking up courage, because courage is the best antidote to the mutating virus of bullying. And that's where we need funding, so that every school has the resources to train and equip young people who are on the scene of an incident before an adult ever knows about it and are in the best position to interrupt it, diffuse it, or de-escalate it.
Natalie, at your school, you're in a high school in San Mateo County. What is your school doing to try to stop violence, stop bullying?
I haven't seen it as much in high school as I did in elementary school and middle school, but we used to have a day dedicated to bullying awareness where someone from one of the local anti-bullying program community thing would come in and talk to us about it, tell us how when you are online and saying something mean about someone, how it is actually hurting them, and how when you think you're on the computer, you think that you can't hurt someone just from them reading it, but you actually can.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a big eye-opener, because people don't realize how that can hurt someone when they don't see their reaction on their face, because you're not there when they're reading it.
Do you see now, when you're saying that you don't see this in your high school that you're going to, do you see some bullying problems going on now where your high school could benefit with someone coming like from Community Matters and coming and talking about bullying and things that can be done to try to curb the violence prevention, or is your school in such that things are so harmonious it's not necessary?
I think actually because the kids in my district have gotten the bullying awareness since they were in elementary school that it's not as
so these big a thing. These young people, including yourself, have been brought up in the last few years with a consciousness
for how to
deal with bullying.
I think that's a big thing to eventually stop bullying, is just to keep raising awareness as we get older, and then eventually it won't be as big of an issue.
Rick, Chuck, pardon me.
I'd like to break
in. Yeah, this is Garrett.
I'm speaking here as a parent, and I want to confirm what Rick is saying about trying to teach to change the culture, because when Natalie was 6, 7 years old and in elementary school, there was a large campaign that was launched, and hearing this funding coming directly off Columbine puts this in perspective for me. But there was notice to the parents about what the school was going to be doing and what they were trying to accomplish. And at the time I thought, well, you know, good luck with that. But as I've watched her progress through school, and in particular what I remember was I brought her to an orientation through the PTA when she was in eighth grade about meeting some high school kids and what they could expect in the coming years in their particular high school. So she was in the San Mateo Foster City School District through eighth grade, and now she's in the San Mateo Unified. And they had a panel of high school kids from Burlingame High, Aragon, San Mateo High, Hillsdale. I may be leaving out one or two of the schools, but it was a panel of kids from all the different high schools. One of the parents stood up and asked these kids, these high school kids, about bullying. And the parent was very concerned for his or her child and what that child might expect in terms of bullying when they were moving into the high school arena. And it was interesting to me to witness all of the kids from San Mateo Union High School District kind of look at each other. And these were kids who were strangers to each other. They went to different schools. And all of them looked at each other in a puzzled fashion with this question, and then essentially turned to the audience and said, it's not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really put up with that. If we see that going on, that's not cool in our school to do, and we let the bully know that. And at that point, I realized just how effective that campaign was in reaching the kids at an early age. By the time they're in high school, I think their culture, in a lot of ways, their attitudes are somewhat cemented.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably
so it's got to be done early. It's got to be done early. Jeff Hayden.
I just wanted to harken back to one comment that Natalie had made when she talked about the anonymity of posting on the internet and how you're insulated. That might be a little hard to reach some of the listeners, particularly grandparents that are working with their kids that aren't as computer savvy as some of the other listeners. And just to make it accessible, think about the last time you drove in a car and saw somebody whose actions behind the wheel, whether they're doing something that shows a lack of hygiene, whatever it was, that clearly they weren't thinking about the people watching them. And that's what people are really experiencing on the internet when they're posting on social networks, putting things out with other people's names on it. Mm-hmm. They're not seeing that reaction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rick, I want to ask you, do you go out to individual high schools to try to bring programs to the individual high schools?
Yeah, we work with multiple districts, you know, about 450 schools here in California and multiple mm-hmm. districts at the elementary, middle, and high school level. But the unique thing we're doing around this bystander education, which I think is a really important part to remedying this virus, is finding the kids in the schools, maybe like Natalie, who have a certain empathy and capacity to speak up, perhaps kids who are a little more self-confident or positioned in their peer groups as kind of leaders, kind of alpha boys and girls, because what we did is we asked kids why they don't speak up.
We've got about 20 seconds before the end of the statewide version. Go ahead.
We asked kids why they don't speak up with bullying, and often they said it was fear of retaliation.
But
the second reason was a surprise. It was that kids said, we don't know what to say or do. No one's given us the tools, and I'm paraphrasing, the tools or the knowledge of how do we intervene when we see our friends say or do things.
Let me finish the statewide version with your website, Rick. It's www.community-matters.org, www.community-matters.org. We have come to the end of the statewide version of the program. It's 728 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KOW in San Francisco. I want to give you all a chance, if you have some questions, comments, want to share with my guests and all of us listening to my guests' comments about bullying. The number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. Let me just tell you who is here. I mean, we're dealing with a subject that, you know, as I say from time to time on these programs, I wish I had at least a couple of hours to do real justice to it, but we don't. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on bullying and school violence prevention. My guests are Deputy District Attorney James Wade, Deputy in Charge of the Juvenile Unit, San Mateo County District Attorney's Office, Jeffrey Hayden, a certified specialist in criminal law. His office is in Redwood City. Garrett Rutgers, a certified specialist in criminal law. He also has an office in Redwood City. Natalie Rutgers, a 16-year-old 10th grade student in high school in San Mateo. And Rick Phillips, Executive Director of Community Matters, a nonprofit organization promoting violence prevention in schools. His office is in Sebastopol. What I'd like to do, Natalie has composed a song, and this will just take a couple of minutes or so, but this is very nice what she's done. I would like you, Natalie, if you would, to say, take about 15 or 20 seconds and give us the words of your song, and then you can sing, maybe not all of it, but some of it, because I think it's nice. And why have you composed this song, first of all?
The song is called Violent Silent, and I composed...
Violent Silent.
Yes.
Okay.
And I composed it because, I've seen multiple friends go through friendships, and when it ends, friends can often, when you get close to someone, you tell them a lot of things, and when friends aren't friends anymore, they can turn against each other and tell other people some things that shouldn't be told, and it just can get very ugly.
So what are give us for 15 seconds or so, what are the words that you will be singing? Because I want you to speak them to us and then sing the song.
Take one step back, take another from me. It's the end of the end, my friend, can't you see? And then the sky's no longer blue, it's true. It's fallen apart.
And what about, when do you say violent silent?
During the chorus.
Okay, violent silent. All right. Would you sing not the whole song? Because I'm hoping people will call in with their interests, their questions. It's 1-415-841-4134. But if you would sing your song, I think that would be really nice.
Take one step back, take another from me. It's the end of the end, my friend, times three. Can't you see? Can't you see? It's a violent.
Very, very nice. Well, there you are, everyone. Here's a young lady, 10th grader, 16 years old, and I think she has a final tomorrow, and she is good enough tomorrow morning, good enough to come and be on the program and give you some of her thoughts with respect to bullying. So let me just encourage you, if you or someone in your family or a neighbor or a friend have been subjected to bullying, or you're aware of it, or let's say you are a bully. I hope you would have enough bravery in you to join us and talk about the problem of bullying, which apparently is something that is growing. So the number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. And if Rick Phillips of Community Matters, if someone, in that we distribute the first half hour of the program to a number of stations throughout California, including Radio Bilingue, which is a group of stations primarily Spanish-speaking, but they've been carrying my program for many years now and have a number of stations in California. If any of the school authorities or parents hear this program and feel, gee, I'd like to find out what perhaps Community Matters might do for my school, how should they get in touch with you? By the website, or what would you suggest?
Thank you for sharing that, Chuck. We as a nonprofit secure grants from foundations, donors, as well as corporate partnerships, and sometimes those dollars then allow us to go to the schools and provide training to staff and students so that we can begin to wake up that courage and change the social norms. The best way is probably to call, and I'll give you a quick number. It's area code 707-823-6159. Or as you indicated earlier, Chuck, just to go to community-matters.org, www.community-matters.org. and information is available about what we do, how we do it, and support we can provide for schools.
I know I got a very good, and I think your wife Jacqueline sent it to me, a very nice several page group of materials that Jacqueline sent to me about community matters, and I think it's something, if those of you out there who are interested in looking into this further and would like to find out more about community matters, I think you should go to the website www.community-matters.org and take a look at this. Would you talk a little bit about the program that you put together, the Safe School Ambassadors Program, or have you already basically told us about it without us, putting in quotes that this is what you're talking about?
Well, I think a little more explicit communication might be helpful to your listeners as well as to my fellow guests. The premise here and the research was, if you want to change the social norms that allow bullying to occur, you've got to change the conditions. The conditions are primarily reinforced or promoted by the behavior of bystanders. If people are silent, it sends a message to the aggressor or perpetrator, it's okay. It sends a message to the target or victim that people don't care. And this allows this mutating virus to continue to grow. So what we know is you've got to begin to wake up bystanders, but not all bystanders, Chuck, are created equally. Some more shy or socially lower positioned in the social hierarchy of a clique or a school, those kids are reluctant to speak up for the fear of retaliation. So our program called Safe School Ambassadors did nothing more than survey students to identify who are the perceived leaders from the different cliques. And the premise was, if we could seed each clique with one or two already established social leaders, but give them the tools, the skills, and the competence that they could use when their friends said or did things, they could interrupt or diffuse something before it became an offense or an incident or something that had to be suspended or expelled. And by doing so, we began to change the social norms in the school to make it more acceptable for young people to speak up. That is the consistent theme of anything that we're going to do, whether it's cyberbullying, relational aggression, whether it's physical or put down or sexual. We have got to get more people to speak up. That means adults and students. Our program and our premise was waking up courage, each one teach one. We begin to change the social norms that allows the virus to grow. And that's the Safe School Ambassador program that's now in close to 1,000 schools.
Hi, Rick, this is James. I agree with what you say 100%, because one of the most difficult things about prosecuting these cases is getting the individuals who are witnesses to come forward and to give statements to law enforcement. They don't want to be seen as snitches. They don't want to be seen as not cool. They don't want to be seen or ostracized by their peer group or the individuals at the school. So because of this fear, they don't come forward. They don't assist in the prosecution, and they leave the victims basically to fend for themselves. So that's one of the things that we also try in the district attorney's office, to get the students to understand that they're not snitches. That they still will be accepted by their school by having the strength and the courage to come forward and assist in the prosecution of individuals that are committing a crime, that are bullying individuals, that are making another person's life unbearable.
Would you say, James, in the experience that you had in this, that young people who do come forward are really expressing bravery? Because it does take some bravery to come forward.
Absolutely. You have to understand, a lot of these individuals are young, and they don't want to be seen by their school as being a snitch. So they want to be part of the in crowd. Mm-hmm. And with that in mind, they believe that if they say anything to police, their individuals in their school are not going to accept them. And it's interesting because in a lot of the prosecutions that I have been involved with, every time the individual witnesses come forward and they assist, they go back to their schools, and a lot of their classmates actually commend them for having that type of bravery.
What is happening today, and I'd like some input from all of you on this, what is happening with, in terms of the bully who, let's say, is prosecuted, or the bully who may be suspended or expelled from school, are we seeing any apparent acknowledgement, hey, I did wrong and I've got to correct myself, or are we seeing anything like that at all?
Well, part of the juvenile criminal justice system is the fact that we are trying to rehabilitate the minors. So they may not initially come forward and accept responsibility, but with the programs that are put in place by our probation department and through the courts, we get the minors to the point to where they can see the harm that they're doing to others, and they come to accept the fact that what they did was wrong.
So are we basically seeing, in terms of what the system is doing, your prosecution, the probation department, organizations similar to Community Matters, are we seeing that the term that is generally used in the criminal area, recidivism, are we seeing that recidivism is being reduced, or what?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer.
Yeah, I was afraid it would be. Yeah.
I believe that it helps in the long run because it goes widespread. Once it gets out that the county and the courts take this seriously, and other individuals in school, all the minors, talk about it, I think that that assists in opening up the eyes for a lot of different students. And I think it does help in curbing the bullying situation. To answer recidivism, I think it probably assists that we don't have many repeat offenders for the same types of offenses.
Rick, in your dealing with this, and you've been doing this now for a number of years, when did you found Community Matters? What year?
We've been doing this work for about 13 years, Chuck. I think I want to just follow up on James' comment that in the schools, what needs to happen is more restorative justice practices, you know, using peer courts, teen courts, peer mediation, providing opportunities for the aggressor, the perpetrator, to understand the impact his or her behavior is having. Often when we deal with bully kids, unless they're really sociopaths, many of the kids don't fully appreciate what they thought was funny. And I know that's a warped comment, funny, to push a kid into a locker or make a comment about somebody. But they don't know the impact. So by providing some form of restitution, providing a place where kids who have perpetrated can learn the impact of their experience, we can begin to at least tap some of their empathy. So we need to move away from punishing and move more towards teaching. And restorative justice and restorative practices at the school level can do a lot towards mediating or mitigating against this issue.
You know, I'm finding it interesting with this topic that we've chosen to do on this segment of Your Legal Rights. And this is Your Legal Rights, and I'm Chuck Finney, and I'll let you know who my guests are again. We're talking about bullying and school violence prevention. But I find it's interesting that no one yet has called. Because generally, when we do a program, no matter what the topic may be, we get a good number of calls. And I don't know whether the audience that listens to this program don't have kids or whatever, or don't have any interest or don't have any responsibility for kids, but I find it interesting there's been no calls. So I'm going to give you the phone number again. And if you're embarrassed, or if you are a young person who's been subjected to this, or you've seen this happen, I would hope that you would like to call. It's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. Here is a question, though, that was brought into the studio to me by Martin, who helps me on the program, and it's this. What is the genesis of most bullying? Is there a significant amount of aggression around issues of sexual orientation, or supposed sexual orientation, or are incidents reported across a wide spectrum, which I think is a wonderful question. What thoughts do you have on that, Rick?
Well, I'm sure the other panelists also have their exposure to this, but our experience is it's a both and. There is a disproportionate amount of bullying for kids who are LGBT or kids who are perceived as with a different sexual orientation.
The abbreviation you've given, what does that stand for?
It stands for kids who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender.
Okay.
Or questioning their sexuality, which is where that Q is sort of attached to the LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. So those young people in our society are subjected at a higher rate to bullying. However, bullying doesn't have a zip code. It happens in urban schools, rural schools, rich kids schools, poor schools, small schools, and big schools. The form, the type, the frequency changes, but bullying itself, and I want to also identify that special needs kids, mm-hmm. kids with learning disabilities or physical differences, they are also disproportionately targeted. It seems that weakness or perceived weakness is permission to bully. And so we see a lot of that piling on and kids being identified as a loser kid, and that label can stick with them for a number of years through their school experience.
If I may, Rick, and you're the expert on this, I certainly am not, but it sounds to me the way you've just described this, that the people who are the bullies, who are taking advantage of the special needs kids, et cetera, really are showing a cowardly attitude toward others. And it would seem to me, is that an approach you take in trying to help people understand what they're doing, that this is really cowardice, or am I going too far and these people are going to react adversely to me saying, you're showing a cowardly attitude by doing this?
Well, the confronting of bullies, especially by target kids, is not a good idea.
Our
experience and the messages of kids is those adults who try to tell, you know, younger children who are being picked on to stand up to the bully, we think that's a dangerous thing to do in
this culture. Sure.
So what we find is if a group of kids, and here's some statistics to know, in almost 90% of bullying incidents, there are witnesses. In 90% of bullying incidents, there are witnesses, but only in about 15% of those cases do kids say anything. So we've got a gap between what young people see and know as right and wrong, and then how they act or confront. And so we know their character is sound, but we've got to give them more encouragement and permission. And what Jeff said earlier about, or James said about snitching, we help kids understand that snitching is trying to get somebody in trouble. Intervening or reporting something is a way to keep people out of trouble and to keep your friends and classmates safe. And as we educate young people with this understanding that Natalie's acquired in her growing up in her district, they then will begin to differentiate and will begin to discern and start to make better decisions about intervening. So thematically, we're not going to change the bully as much as we can change the bully's behavior by focusing on the witnesses and getting them to confront the bully in mass, in group.
Let me do this. I want to take some calls because people now want to talk with you, but let me let all of you know who's here. You've just been listening to Rick Phillips, Executive Director of Community Matters, which is an organization in Sebastopol. If you want to find out more information, you can go to its website, which is www.community-matters.org, or you can call it 707-823-6159. Natalie Rutgers is here. She's a 10th grade 16-year-old student in a San Mateo County high school. Garrett Rutgers, her father, is a certified specialist in criminal law. His office is in Redwood City. Jeff Hayden is a great friend of this program. He's a certified specialist in criminal law, also his office is in Redwood City. And then James Wade is the deputy district attorney in charge of the juvenile unit, San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. So let's start with Amy. Amy, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thanks. I'm calling. I'm a young adult, and when I was younger, I was bullied a little bit. I bullied a tiny bit myself. Maybe I just would like to call it making fun. There's a gray line in between there. How do we know when it's just making fun and when it's bullying? But I also did a lot of intervening. So anyway, I feel like I have a little experience on all sides a lot of intervening actually in high school. But the main point I have is that I think parents can do a lot. I remember one time my father scolded me harshly because I was making fun of somebody else for being different. And he said, just because it's different doesn't mean it's weird or stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of shouted at me, and it hurt my feelings at the time, but it was one of the greatest gifts that a parent could give. So this might be a little bit off the topic of bullying, but just, you know, making fun of people and talking badly about them, that whole thing. I believe that parents can make a great influence.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that comment. I think it's, to me, it sounds like you're right on point. Thank you very much for calling, Amy.
Thanks for the show.
Okay, bye-bye. Lane, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Thank you so much for having this show. This is such an important topic. I've heard a lot. I really wish that there had been anti-bullying programs like your guest is about that.
You know, you're breaking up, Lane. I don't know if you're talking on a cell phone or not, but unfortunately, we're missing some of your words.
Sorry, I'm talking on a cell phone.
Yeah, but I thank you very much for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Nick, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
I have a question. I'm looking for advice on how to encourage a young man. I'm involved with him through the Big Brothers program, and some time ago he related to me an incident that had happened to him earlier that week where he witnessed a bullying incident and hesitated to intervene because of fear of both, I think, social and physical consequences that might have resulted from him getting involved. You know, he's not a big kid.
And was this at school? Was it at school, Nick?
It was in school, after school.
Okay.
In a school environment, more or less.
What grade is he?
Oh, he was, would have been seventh grade, I believe.
Seventh grade at the time. And are you asking what?
I feel like I would like to revisit that conversation that's passed. But, I mean, what would I do to encourage him if I was to have the same conversation with him today?
Okay.
You know, tools could I mean?
James, do you want to respond to Nick first?
Yes, I do. Hello, Nick. Thanks for calling. I understand what you're saying. And one of the things you can always do is tell your child they can speak with a favorite teacher. A lot of schools have police officers that are also community service officers that are at the schools every day, and they can go and talk to these individuals and just inform them and alert them to what is occurring and what they've seen. The other good thing that you always should tell your child is if other people know about this, give those names to the resource officer or the teacher, because I always see that there's strength in numbers. And the more individuals that are contacted and that are willing to make a statement, the more comfortable everybody feels with it. So that's what I would advise my child if I were talking to them about this situation.
Any comments from you, Rick, for Nick?
Yeah, I think Nick's point's a good one, and I'm sure it's echoed by many parents or adults. I think one of the things we educate kids to do is to be discerning about where they are physically, what the environment is. Do you know the people? Because it is risky to intervene with people you don't know in a parking lot where there's no adults around and no other kids. So young people have to be discerning. I think also, Nick, you can encourage that young man or young woman to at least support the victim, support the target, maybe even after the incident, just as a way to let that person know that not everybody in school believes that that's all right. So there's even a way to reduce the risk of retaliation by really just supporting the target or victim in a bullying incident as well.
Okay, let's take a couple more calls. Beth, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello?
Hi, Beth. You're on the air. Welcome to the program.
I have a couple questions, and I've just been on for about 15 minutes now, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating something.
Go ahead.
I'm interested in why so many adults have a blind eye when they see this type of thing happening, teachers and people who are working at school playgrounds. And there's a lot of attitude that this is just what kids do mm-hmm. when they're growing up. And also, I'm wondering if I'm correct in assuming that a lot of bullying behavior is because the bully's been treated that way at home.
Mm, interesting. Let me get some comments for you on that, Beth. Thank you for those very good 2 points, if you turn your radio back up. Rick, since you've been dealing so much with this in the last 13 years, what comments do you have for Beth with regard to the blind eye? And is it much of the bullying comes from because a child has been dealt with very roughly or perhaps in a bullying fashion by a parent or parents?
Yeah, let's take the first one first. I think there is a blind eye attitude, and I think there's two primary reasons, Chuck. One is a lot of it is pervasive and hard to see. You could be standing in a cafeteria doing supervision as an adult teacher, and kids can do things with signs, a look, just a glance. They can do things, of course, as expressed earlier, electronically. So often adults don't see the more subtle, under-the-radar bullying that is non-physical. That's one reason. And I think those of us who are a little older have a perception that bullying is just sort of something that we go through. You know, boys will be boys. What doesn't hurt you will make you stronger. And I think so we've got to educate adults that that is not accurate. Kids are more vulnerable today. It's starting at a younger age, and we've got to interrupt it and intervene at an earlier stage. So she's right about the blind eye. Quickly to say something about the bully, it's not a one-size-fits-all. Certainly some kids who've been victimized themselves or traumatized by emotional or physical violence will take that out on others. And many bullies, you know this and the legal people know this, many of them bring that bully behavior into a domestic relationship mm-hmm. or into a workplace environment.
Yes.
And so we know that bullies often tend to end up in jail more yeah. than people who weren't bullies. The last part is some bullying is actually popular kids using their social position to even achieve higher social status. It's a conscious choice. They're not just low self-esteem kids. There's plenty of high self-esteem kids who use their social position to better position themselves in greater popularity using a very cruel method.
We're getting to the point where we're coming to the end of the program, actually, and what I want to do is let me give to you the website again for Community Matters in case you'd like to get in touch with it, www.community-matters.org, or the phone number is 707-823-6159. I want to thank you all very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you on the program. Rick Phillips, Executive Director of Community Matters, thank you very much for joining us.
You're very welcome, and thank you, Natalie, for sharing your song.
Natalie, thank you. Natalie Rutgers, thank you very much for composing that song and singing it for us. It's just delightful. Thank you, Garrett Rutgers, her father, certified specialist in criminal law. Jeff Hayden, thank you again, as so many times I thank you for being involved with this program, certified specialist in criminal law in Redwood City. And James Wade, my compatriot at the San Mateo County DA's office, deputy in charge of the juvenile unit, San Mateo County, thanks so much.
Thank you, Chuck.
Very nice to have you here. Let me tell you what's going on next week. This is an interesting new book about big tobacco and cigarette addiction. We're going to be talking about it. Dr. Stanton Glantz of UCSF, the Center for Tobacco Control Research and Education, and attorney Sharon Eubanks, who litigated a federal Department of Justice case against major cigarette manufacturers. There's a new book about this, and we'll be talking about it next week. Funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Trusts and Estates section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Your legal rights production staff members are program engineer Eric Jansen. Eric, very nice having you on the program. And Martin McLean, who helps me on the program, production assistant. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Chuck Finney.